welcome to another episode of the Security Ledger Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Roberts, the editor-in-chief at the Security Ledger. It's been another active week in the information security space. WikiLeaks' headline-grabbing release of a trove of hacking tools purportedly used by the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency generated a lot of attention, as did a speech in Boston by FBI Director James Comey, in which he suggested that he's still angry about the use of strong encryption tools, still likes the idea of government backdoors, and may be interested in subpoenaing your memories. There was the release of yet another draft framework for securing the Internet of Things, this time from the group Consumer Reports. What does it all mean? With us to talk about these issues and shed some light on the week that was, we have Sven Dietrich. Sven's an associate professor of mathematics and computer science at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, which is part of the City University of New York. Sven's an IEEE senior member, and he's a member of the steering committee on IEEE's cybersecurity initiative. I started out by asking Sven about WikiLeaks' release of CIA hacking tools and whether it contained any surprises.
Well, I started looking into what WikiLeaks has made available. I've read some of the articles describing it, and I looked at the descriptions of the web pages that are there. And it's no surprise. I mean, we know that most nations have a hacking team. And from the perusal, it is apparent that they are taking advantage of vulnerabilities. They're exploiting vulnerabilities in software. That's exactly the kinds of vulnerabilities that we're trying to patch as a profession, as a cybersecurity profession. We are trying to patch those vulnerabilities. Some of the vulnerabilities that were being exploited there date back a few years, and most likely the majority of them have been patched. Now, what they are referring to is what's called a zero-day exploit, meaning exploits that refer to vulnerabilities that are not known yet and that are being used to penetrate systems, stay persistent, and gain partial or full control of the computer system.
I think one of the things that was surprising to people was how wide-ranging the CIA's interests are, in addition to tools for hacking iOS and Android, the two major mobile device platforms. There were also tools for devices like Samsung smart TVs. There was talk about some connected vehicle platforms that there was interest in, although not a mature tool for that. Did that surprise you that their interests are already coalescing around what we might consider Internet of Things platforms like smart TVs, smart cars?
Surprised? No. Paul, in essence, we're dealing with the same thing, right? It's just a computer. Whether we're talking Internet of Things or a mobile phone or a desktop or laptop, it is still a computer running some form of operating system. And that software will have vulnerabilities. Vulnerabilities will sooner or later get exploited. So, I'm not surprised that they're working on exploits for those. Because as we move into the Internet of Things, we're letting more and more devices to be connected to the Internet, and we're letting more and more businesses, those devices, into our homes and our offices. So it is a logical target to pursue by intelligence agencies or the cybercrime folks, transnational crime, local crime, whatever it may be, software is going to be the target. So what is going to be interesting, since this release, in a way, supersedes the Snowden revelations in size, I think it will take some time to process all of this. We've only seen this is what the first week that we are perusing it. As we dig deeper and analyze the documents, I'm sure we will find many more hints as to what's going on behind the scenes. I'm really looking forward to those surprises.
I mean, obviously, the Snowden revelations were kind of earth-shaking in their breadth. My sense is WikiLeaks, the CIA stuff, maybe not so much. And should people really be surprised that the CIA or any other spy agency, law enforcement group has these types of tools in its tool belt?
No, this should not be surprising. If you go visit the spy museums, you'll find all the tools they had in the dark ages, if you will, the Cold War. This is just a cyber equivalent, right? It's whether you had the spy watches, now you have the spy tool belt. It's just that it's software, and it's no different except in a different realm.
People are bringing connected devices into their homes, whether those are, you know, Wi-Fi enabled cameras, Amazon Echo or Google Home, you know, these kind of voice assistant devices. It's clear intelligence agencies are interested in these, either for spying domestically or abroad. But the law hasn't, at least in this country, hasn't necessarily caught up to these technologies. So, you know, there are very clear laws around tapping phone lines and the conditions under which, you know, law enforcement can do things like that. It's not as clear yet in the digital realm what protocols need to be followed for them to access that information, either traversing those devices or stored on those devices. What should consumers know? And if they're really concerned about privacy, should they just be avoiding this category of products altogether?
Good question, Paul. So what many people don't realize is the capabilities of the devices, right? Some consumers might not realize that their voice is being recorded, transmitted. Maybe they're making some assumptions about how the voice is transported to the destination, encrypted or not. But you just have to have this really brutal realization. There is a microphone that is on. If you have an Echo, if you have a TV that you talk to, you have to understand that if it's plugged in, if it's connected, it can be tapped sooner or later. So if you have a device there, then you should consider making sure it's off when you really want privacy. So if you don't want to be connected, pull the plug, right? That's the surprise here for some consumers was the fact that there is a fake off mode. Well, you have firmware on the device that controls various parts of the TV, such as the on light, and pretty much everything else that is under control of the firmware, the operating system of the device. So that can all be affected, all be modified. So it is only recently that Samsung warned consumers to not have private conversations in the presence of their phones. If you have a TV with a microphone, you should consider doing the same.
Somewhat on that same theme, we heard this week from the FBI's director, James Comey. He spoke at an event at Boston College on cybersecurity. And a couple things came out of that. One was that he reiterated his, you know, argument that the technology community is making life harder for law enforcement and the FBI by promoting and distributing strong encryption tools that prevent digital devices like phones from being analyzed. The other is some kind of worrisome statements about our memories and how they are not beyond the reach of the law and the courts that I think struck some people as a little Orwellian. Your thoughts on Mr. Comey and the ongoing argument about encryption backdoors and whether strong encryption is making us less safe or more safe?
Well, there's two things to consider, Paul. There's the encryption and the systems, right? We're talking about end-to-end encryption. I absolutely favor the use of a strong end-to-end encryption and encryption of our back-end databases wherever we can. If you think about it from a threat model, the enemy is everywhere. The criminals are reaching into our devices and trying to get our private information. I understand the need for intelligence agencies to perform surveillance. What came up, for example, in the context of the WikiLeaks is that, yes, there is a threat to apps like WhatsApp, Signal, and so on, but it's really about they're penetrating the end devices. The end devices run software. If that one gets compromised, then all bets are off anyway, right? But definitely we need that assurance that when we're communicating over the network, with remote hosts, that conversation, that transmission is strongly protected.
I mean, is there a technology fix for some of these issues that we're talking about, or are these problems that really need to be solved at the law and policy level to kind of create rules that everyone can play by? I mean, it seems specific, especially in the case of the Internet of Things, that the technology is running far ahead of the moral, ethical, you know, legal conversation about the implications of all this new technology.
Well, we're revisiting something that was a big discussion, I would say, 20 to 25 years ago. If you think about the crypto wars in the 90s, we talked about the clipper chip.
Right? Yeah, the clipper chip, right.
That was a discussion back then. We are sort of revisiting this right now. Backdooring, in my opinion, is not the solution. Just if we do not have the assurance, if we cannot have the assurance that our communications are safe, why bother encrypting?
Is there a danger if the perception becomes that these devices are all more or less snooping on us, either for the benefit of advertisers or the government or both, is there a danger that people will turn away from the technology altogether? The Ted Kaczynski response, kind of go off into the woods in a cabin and, write in pen and ink and just isolate themselves.
It is a thought, right? It becomes Orwellian, of course, if you have devices listening all the time. That is the example from 1984. For a long time, we're dealing with a scenario where we didn't think that the state would really become a threat and enemy. But we know that political systems can change. And if we put in an infrastructure that could perform surveillance on us, at the blink of an eye, that can be turned against.
I mean, one of the concerns around IoT is that it allows manufacturers and vendors to lock in control of their products in perpetuity, basically, by virtue of, the software-based controls. The publication Consumer Reports came out with a IoT security and privacy framework this week and called explicitly for manufacturers to create a right to repair or enable a right to repair on their products. Is this something that comes up in your discussions in the academic setting? And what are your thoughts?
This is, of course, has been an ongoing discussion over the last few years. The freedom to play with our devices, since I live in the academic world right now, and play a little bit in industry, the desire is, of course, when you buy a device, that you can tinker with it and modify it to taste. I don't see why a consumer should be restricted into modifying a device if they have the right capabilities. If you consider the ethical viewpoint that as long as you do not perform harm on anybody else, why not modify and improve it and really foster this culture of hacking in the purest sense, as in playing with technology in a creative way. So I fully support this hacking for improving the devices.
Sven Dietrich, thank you so much for coming on and talking to the Security Ledger.
Great. Thank you, Paul.
Sven Dietrich is an associate professor in the Mathematics and Computer Science Department of the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, part of the City University of New York, and an IEEE senior member.